Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And the Lord sent Mukunda Dutt and Vasudev Dutt to prepare for his arrival. In a place called Navagram, Sri Advaitacharya took birth. In Bhutan, Lord Brahma appeared as Thakur Haridas. Haridas was born in a Malecha family, but it is said that he came in contact with Vaishnavas when he was very young, took initiation, chanted the holy names, and left his home to go to Benapole, where he sat in a lonely little forest and chanted at least 300,000 names, 192 rounds of the Maha Mantra every day, without fail. Scholars tell us that Haridas Thakur appeared 35 years before Lord Chaitanya's appearance. In Eka Chakra, in Radha Desh, Sri Balaram himself, Nityananda Prabhu, appeared. In this way, everything was being orchestrated. Paramananda Puri appeared in Chikuta, in the south. And the great Madhavendra Puri, who was considered to be the very root of ecstatic, of the tree of ecstatic love, made his appearance within this world. Madhavendra Puri was traveling around to various places, but he saw how materialistic and selfish and egoistic people were, and it broke his heart. It didn't break his heart because he was prejudiced, because he hated karmis. It broke his heart because he loved everyone. And he couldn't bear to see how they were wasting their lives. You see, the more selfless and compassionate you are, the more you actually feel for the ignorance of others. But that is a type of ecstasy. Madhavendra Puri had many great disciples, including Pundarik Vidyanidhi, Nityananda Prabhu, Paramananda Puri, Brahmananda Puri, some say Jagannath Mishra, Advaitacharya. But one of his very favorite disciples was Ishvara Puri. It is said that Madhavendra Puri, after traveling around India for many years, going to Vrindavan, establishing the Gopal deity on Govardhan Hill, his wonderful pastimes with Kirchor Gopinath, during his last days in this world, his physical body appeared to be an invalid. And at that time, one of his disciples, Ramchandra Puri, came to his bedside. And he heard his guru crying in the ecstasies of the separation, in the mood of Srimati Radharani toward Krishna. Crying, "My Lord, you are infinitely merciful and kind. Please be kind upon me. You have left Vrindavan and gone to Mathura. In separation from you, What am I supposed to do? He was crying in this way. It was the highest ecstasy of love and separation. Ramchandra Puri, his own disciple, told him, if you can't find Krishna, meditate on Brahman. Why are you in so much anxiety? He displeased his guru. Madhavendra Puri said, get out, I don't want to see your face. And after that, Ramchandra Puri, although he was still a sannyasi, he was still apparently a disciple, he broadcasted himself in that way. Special effects. What is that? His tendency was to find faults with others. Because he lost the grace of his guru due to his false pride, instead of finding pleasure in seeing the good in others, his pleasure was in criticizing others. During that same time, there was a disciple named Ishwara Puri, who with such a grateful heart felt it was the ultimate privilege of his life to clean the urine and stool from his guru's body, because his guru couldn't get up. And when he heard his guru, Madhavendra Puri, crying in separation, he recognized that this is the highest ecstasy of ecstatic love of God. And for the pleasure of his guru, day and night, Ishwara Puri, while he cleaned him and massaged him and did all menial things for him, although he was a learned sannyasi, he was constantly singing Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's teachings, and Krishna's names to his guru. And Madhavendra Puri was so very pleased that he said, bless you, my child. I pray and I bless you to attain unmotivated love for Lord Krishna. And by that blessing for this very simple menial service, it's very incredible, because Ishwara Puri was a great scholar and he was a very, very austere sannyasi. But what made him distinct from all the other great scholars and sannyasi ascetics was how humble and menial he was willing to serve and please his guru. Whether it meant giving lectures to millions of people or cleaning urine and stool, he didn't see a difference. Whatever pleased his guru was his life and soul. That was the character of Ishwara Puri. And therefore, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was to accept him as his spiritual master. All of these divine personalities were in different places, and little by little, they all started coming to Navadvipa. And Sri Advaitacharya, he had a house in Shantipur. He married a very, very great, noble, pure-hearted lady named Sita Devi. had a big family. While he was living in Shantipur, he also had a house in Navadvip. And Advaitacharya became the leader of all the Vaishnavas. He was a scholar who was teaching the scriptures, but he was unlike any other teacher in Navadvip, because everyone else was teaching the scriptures from a perspective of how to satisfy your selfish desires or get some mystical powers or get liberation from this, the sufferings of this world. But Sri Advaitacharya, he explained every word of every verse of every scripture there was in its essence of how to attain the ecstatic love of Krishna that is within us. And hardly anyone took him serious, because no one wanted ecstatic love of Krishna. They wanted money. They wanted power. They wanted more children. They wanted better houses. They wanted revenge over their enemies. They wanted the fame of being great. Advaitacharya saw the condition of the world. And even the highest seat of learning in the world, Navadvip, what was the condition? Due to compassion and love for all beings, Sri Advaita was crying. He couldn't be happy with his own ecstatic love for Krishna if he was seeing others without it. Even people who were very, very apparently materialistically very happy, healthy, beautiful, prosperous, he cried for them. Because he knew it was just a matter of a little time till old age, disease, and death is going to destroy all of that. And even temporarily, their so-called happiness is only distracting them from the real happiness that is within us. The ecstatic love for God. And he saw how even, what to speak of the atheistic people, even the so-called religious people, even the so-called gurus and great philosophers and representatives of scriptures, they were not teaching people how to love God. They were teaching people either how to better enjoy material resources through your religious practice, or annihilate all materialism. Annihilate everything. But to love God, to utilize all the beautiful things in the material and spiritual world as an expression of love of God, that's the highest truth. He didn't see it anywhere. At the same time, Srivas Thakur and his three brothers, Sri Ram, Sripati, Sri Nidhi, they also came before Lord Chaitanya from Sri Hatha. And they moved to Navadvip. And they would associate with Advaitacharya. There was a small group of devotees. Haridas Thakur came there, Srivas, Advaita, and some others. And they would discuss Krishna and chant the names of Krishna and try to invite other people, but nobody was interested. Sri Advaitacharya was very special. His form of worship was so simple. He knew everything. He could perform the most elaborate yajnas,
He could do the most intense forms of meditation. He was the most philosophically astute scholar.
But yet, he would worship the Lord by just offering tulsi leaves and Ganges water and chant the holy names. You see, it is not the ritual that helps us to make spiritual advancement, however simple or elaborate it is. It's to the degree we want to please purify our own heart and please Krishna through the execution of the ritual.
Advaitacharya felt that in this age of Kali, now and to come, only if the Supreme Lord Krishna descends from Goloka Vrindavan to reveal his divine pastimes and teach the chanting of the holy names according to his own compassion, can people reach that destination. And he had absolute faith. If he just offered tulsi leaves and Ganges water while chanting Krishna's names, Krishna would definitely appear. And that's what he did. On the banks of the Ganges, he just offered simple water and simple leaves, something anyone can do. But with such compassion upon all living beings. He was crying for you and me. And he would tell the devotees, 100% without doubt, Krishna's coming. Because he must, because he will answer the prayers of his devotee. And Srivas and his brothers were doing kirtan day and night, trying to invoke Krishna to come to this world. At that time, Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi, they had 8 daughters. Each one of them, in their infancy, died. They did special worship of the Lord in their temple, Shalagram, because they wanted a child. Instinctively, it was Krishna in their heart that wanted to take birth, and it was Krishna that was giving them that desire for a child. And Balaram appeared. Just like in Krishna's Leela, before Krishna appeared in the heart of Devaki, first Balaramji did. And he was transferred to Rohini. So our acharyas explain that the 8 daughters represent the 8 coverings of the ego of this material world. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and the ego. These are the 8 material coverings of material creation. First, attachments to these things must be removed. And Balaram, who is the original guru, is the one who prepares our heart for Krishna. When Vishwarupa was born, he was so beautiful and full of all good qualities. They were so happy. But unlike materialistic people who, when they get what they want from God, then they don't do their worship so much anymore, because they don't need him. They say, thank you. We'll see you next time I need you. Rather, they increase their worship by many times in gratitude for the child that they received. In the year 1485, the month of Magh, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was coming, Krishna, with the love of Sri Radha, appeared within the heart of Jagannath Mishra. And from Jagannath Mishra was transferred to the heart of Sachi Devi. It was not in any way the way material children are born. There wasn't physical contact. Jagannath Mishra one day told Sachi Devi, I had a dream. It wasn't exactly a dream, it was a vision where I saw this infinite light enter into my heart, and then I saw that infinite light enter into your heart. And Sachi Devi said, I had the same dream. And soon after that, they realized she was pregnant. And after that pregnancy, incredible things started happening. First of all, they were so happy. They didn't know why they were so happy. They were in ecstasy 24 hours a day, both Sachi Devi and Jagannath Mishra. And people kept doing things for them, giving them gifts, giving them cloth. Sachi Devi one day told Jagannath Mishra that last night, you know, I don't know, but I was seeing all these celestial beings offering obeisances to the child in my womb. I was seeing celestial beings offering prayers of worship to the child. They understood it was not an ordinary person that had taken shelter within her womb. They eagerly awaited. 13 months passed and the child remained in the womb. So they started to get worried, because 13 months is a long time. So they consulted Nilambar Chakravarti Thakur, the father of Sachi Devi, who was one of the greatest astrologers and seers of the truth and the future in the whole world. And Nilambar Chakravarti, he did a reading, and he told the mother and father that this child is a divine being, and this child is waiting for the supremely most auspicious time to be born. It was in the year 1486, during the month of Palgun. It was a full moon night. And it was also a time of a lunar eclipse. Now in India, traditionally, an eclipse is considered extremely inauspicious. When Rahu covers the moon, some people say that, you know, anything that's cooked at that time is impure, and everything's impure. And in those days, people were very superstitious. And if they weren't superstitious, they took ritualistically very seriously all these auspicious and inauspicious things. So, in order to counteract the inauspiciousness of an eclipse, the recommended process was to chant the names of Hari in the river Ganges, especially. to not get contaminated and not have your material life disturbed. So millions of people were chanting the names of Hari.
And during that time, Srivas and his brothers, they saw
nobody ever chants Krishna's names. They would chant some demigods or goddesses' names for material benefits from time to time. But nobody ever was chanting Krishna's names. But now everyone is chanting. Srivas said, let this eclipse last forever.
And both the Hindus and the Muslim people, they saw millions and millions of Hindus chanting Hari, Hari, and it was so contagious, they all started imitating him, going Hari, Hari.
Everyone in all directions was crying out, Hari, Hari.
And that was the most auspicious time. Very interesting. Sometimes what is most auspicious is most auspicious. Because sometimes what is most auspicious brings people to really take shelter of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya was coming to teach pure love of God through the chanting of the holy names. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said that Lord Chaitanya, he made a garland, a mala, with the flowers of Krishna's names and Krishna Prem, love of Krishna. And with his own loving hands, he put that garland around the whole world. So when millions and millions and millions of people were filling the entire land with the loud chanting of the holy names, the Lord appeared. And he didn't cry. He smiled. Do you ever see a baby like this? He came out of the womb of his mother and he smiled. Because he heard everyone chanting the names of the Lord. He was so happy. And as soon as they saw this little baby with a golden complexion and lovely lotus-like eyes, whoever saw him fell in love with him. Uncontrollable love poured from their hearts toward this little baby. And when all the devotees heard about this, they all wanted to come and do their pujas and offer their prayers and their blessings to the child. Advaita was in Shantipur, and he sent his wife Sita on a palanquin. And when she saw little baby Nimai, she was thinking that the same Krishna of Gokul has appeared with a golden complexion. And Malini, the wife of Srivas, then Srivas himself came. When the Lord was born, even though nobody even knew he was the Lord, the devotees became so happy. Advaita Prabhu and Haridas Thakur were in Shantipur. All of a sudden, they started crying in ecstasy, leaping and dancing with each other. And people were wondering, have they gone crazy? They did. For Krishna, because they could understand something supremely auspicious is happening. This way all of the devotees from all these different directions came spontaneously to offer their prayers and blessings for little baby. Nilambar Chakravarti, he did the astrology. He said, this is a divine being who has the power to deliver the whole world. He's going to nourish the hearts of everyone. And then one Brahmin came. And this Brahmin, he explained how this child is Lord Narayan himself, who has descended from the spiritual world. He will embody all spiritual transcendental qualities. He will cause the whole world to chant the holy names. He will deliver from the cycle of birth and death anyone who takes shelter of him. He will give supreme pleasure to anyone who accepts the gift that he has to offer. And then, through his astrology, he saw when this child is 24 years old, he's going to take sannyas. But he decided not to say that part, because he didn't want to mix the happiness with something else. And when Jagannath Mishra heard what this Brahmin was saying, he was so happy. He wanted to give him charity, but he had nothing to give. He was just a simple Brahmin. So Jagannath Mishra, whatever he had, he was giving to everyone who was blessing his son. And he fell at the feet of this Brahmin and cried, offering his thanks. Little Nimai, there was a name-giving ceremony. The lady, Sachi Devi and her friends, they named him Nimai because he was born under a neem tree. And Nilambar Chakravarti had the Brahma named him Vishwambar because he was going to give nourishment to the universe. And Jagannath Mishra and others, because he had beautiful golden limbs, they named him Gauranga. And other people, because he was the beloved son of Sachi, they called him Sachi Nandana. Little Nimai, for 1 month, according to tradition, was in a little hut near the Ganges with Sachi Devi and the family. And the little boy, he captivated everyone's hearts in such a way that their life and soul was only to make him happy. And the greatest suffering in their life was to see him cry. A little Nimai would start to cry. It was unbearable because they loved him so much. They would do anything and everything for him. But nothing would stop his crying until, when there's nothing else you can do, you call out for God. They all chanted the holy names. As they chanted, little Nimai, he smiled. This beaming smile that totally drowned them in ecstasy. And Nimai would cry again a few minutes later, and they knew exactly what they had to do. They'd clap their hands and chant, and Nimai would smile. Sometimes he would laugh. This little infant baby would laugh and laugh and laugh and smile and raise his arms. It brought them such satisfaction. And sometimes they were scared because they knew that 8 of Sachi Devi's children had died. They were afraid for his health. The Lord inspired them with this fear just to get them to stay with him and chant practically day and night.
The family members, the friends, the devotees were gathered around the little baby, clapping their hands and singing the holy names of the Lord. After 1 month, Sachi Devi performed the ritual of going to the Ganges to take her bath with little Nimai and do puja for Shashti, who is a demigoddess who is supposed to protect baby children. And she did all these pujas and rituals. And then she entered into the house of the family. Now one may ask, Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi are crest jewel of self-realized yogis. Why were they doing these rituals, which are usually done by very superstitious people? Yes? Even in Yashoda and Nanda, we read about when Krishna, after Trinavarta came, and they saw Krishna laying there, after Putana, they would put cow dung in different places of his body, and they would whisk cow tails around Krishna and do all kinds of rituals, which seems quite superstitious, doesn't it? Why? In India, there's so many superstitious people. Srila Prabhupada said that his mother used to take saliva and put it on his forehead every day, her own. He said, I never knew why. To this day, I don't know why she did it. But it was for his protection. Some Bengali tradition to protect a baby or a small child. So there's superstitions everywhere. But in my travels in the world, India is very advanced in this particular field. And here these great Paramahamsa devotees are doing superstitious things. They're worshipping Chandi and doing this little ritual and that little ritual and another, just to protect the baby. So one may ask, why? It seems like it's very ordinary. But what we must understand is they were doing it out of love for Krishna, out of love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You see, it really doesn't matter whether you do something that's mathematically, scientifically astute. Doesn't matter whether you're doing something that's logically proven by all the previous acharyas, or whether you're doing a superstitious ritual. What matters is our motivation. That's the essence of what the great acharyas are teaching us. So because they were doing it pure love for God, the little superstitious things of Nanda and Yashoda or Sachi Devi was the highest expression of pure devotional service. Because Krishna is bhavagrahi. He sees our sincerity. Therefore, when even the greatest philosophers, the greatest spiritual scientists, the most logical and advanced yogis and saints, when they hear about these little rituals of Sachimata, they cry in ecstasy. Why? Because they see, they know. It's done with pure love. Advaitacharya, just some leaves and water, tulsi leaves. But it was the highest ritual. It was the highest offering of love.
we must understand this very carefully, especially here in India. The essence is bhakti. Bhakti is based on knowledge. Knowledge that the jiva, the eternal, that the soul within all of us is eternal. Jivera swarupoi krishnera nityadas, and the nature of the soul is eternally the servant of Krishna. And the fulfillment of service is service with love. So with this philosophical understanding, which is the very essence of service with true love, without selfish motivation, for the pleasure of the Lord, even if it is in the shape of an apparent ritual or a superstition, it's pleasing to Krishna. That doesn't mean we should start doing superstitious stuff. It means we should focus, whatever we do, should be done with this philosophical knowledge of love of God. Otherwise, we're not following in the footsteps of the acharyas. And then, when we hear about Sachi Devi's different ways of protecting the Lord, we understand this is the goal of life. One time, when little Nimai was just crawling, he learned to crawl. This is wonderful. Krishna tells in Gita, I'm the ability in man, the strength of the strong, the intelligence of the intelligent. And we see, you know, so many people climbing mountains. And we see demigods flying in the sky, so many people, and they're all getting their powers from Krishna. And here, Krishna is learning how to crawl. And he actually learned really fast. And he crawled really fast. He was crawling around, and Mother Sachi and all of her friends, it was really hard to keep up with little Nimai crawling around all over the place. He was very curious. And one day, there was a gigantic, monstrous snake in the courtyard of Sachi Devi's house. And little Nimai saw this big snake and crawled really fast right up to the snake and grabbed the snake's tail. And the snake couldn't get away. So the snake coiled up in a circle, and little Nimai laid on top of the coiled serpent. He was smiling and laughing. He was laughing quite loud for a little child. So they were wondering, where's Nimai? Where's Nimai? They heard his laughing, so they came running, and they saw this giant snake. And he's laying in the coils. They were horrified. What to do? If we bother this snake, he may bite Nimai and kill him, or he may strangle him by coiling around his body and squeezing. They were beside themselves. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know what they couldn't do. Little Nimai was smiling, laughing, and they were crying and crying and crying. Our child is going to be killed by this snake. They started crying, Garuda, Garuda, because Garuda is the killer of snakes. They couldn't get close because they were afraid if they did, they would waken the snake and the snake would kill the child. At the same time, they were just besides themselves in total anxiety of love. And the snake, who actually happened to be a Nantashesha, who wanted to see the Lord and do some seva, when he saw all the anguish he was causing the relatives, the snake uncoiled and started to slither away. And little Nimai tried to grab him again. Meanwhile, the relatives, as soon as they saw there was just inches away from the snake's tail, Nimai was trying to follow him, they picked him up and took him away. And as soon as they put him down, he started crawling full speed toward the snake again. And they had to pick him up again, and he started crawling. In this way, little Nimai put them in such fear. Now let's evaluate this, because we're kind of in a philosophical mode. Why were they in such fear? Because these are self-realized souls. These are great devotees. And the jivatma is beyond death. Najayate mriyate vakadachit. Krishna says the soul is never born and never dies. So that snake couldn't kill this child, couldn't kill the soul. So why were they so attached to the body of this child? Hare Krishna. Because on the spiritual platform, the intersection of spirituality, transcendence with this material world is fascinating. That the Lord utilizes the vulnerabilities of material nature to increase the ecstasies of the love of his devotees. They were so totally saturated in their motherly love for the Lord, to protect the Lord, they were afraid. Now, Bhagavad Gita tells us one of the first qualities of a self-realized soul is they're fearless. Abhaya charanaravindare, when you take shelter of the Lord, you become fearless. Because you realize there is no birth and there is no death for your soul or for anyone else's soul. So what's the reason to fear? Yet, Yashoda, Nanda, and these forms of Jagannath, Mishra, Sachi, and all these great devotees, they were totally engulfed in fear. But it wasn't material fear. They were in a state of total fearlessness because they had no material attachments. Their attachment was for God, even though they didn't know he was God. If Lord Chaitanya would have revealed to himself to be God to them, they couldn't love him as a child. Not spontaneously. They had already realized God in full. Therefore, the Lord appeared in such a way to increase the intimacy of their relationship, where their parental affection eclipsed their knowledge of his supremacy, to facilitate deeper feelings of affection. The Nectar of Devotion, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, explains that there are apparently material impetuses that increase the ecstasy of love. And one is fear. It has nothing to do with material, selfish ignorance. Just like the deity is Radha and Krishna. And naturally, we read about the Goswamis and their descendants in Vrindavan. How when conquerors were coming to destroy temples and destroy deities, they could have just said, well, you know, Krishna's supreme and he's unconquerable, so let the deity be there, no problem. What can they do? Even if they break them, they can't break Krishna. No, they went through so many difficulties. Some of them gave their lives to secretly take the deity away. Srinathji or Gopal, the pujari, who was a pure devotee, hid him in the bushes and ran away. So that the deity wouldn't be hurt. Govindadev, Madan Mohan, Gopinath, they were brought to Jaipur for protection. So to fear for Krishna, that fear increases the ecstasy of our love for Krishna. It's higher than being fearless. In fact, it's a state beyond being fearless, is to be afraid for God. Not afraid of God, but afraid for God. And Vrindavan Das Thakur explains, anyone who with faith and devotion hears this story of little Nimai going to sleep on the snake will never be struck by the snake of birth and death. One time, little Nimai was roaming around. By this time, he was just learning to walk. And some thieves happened to see the nice ornaments that his mother put on him. They thought, this is really easy. He's just a little tiny child, just learning to walk. We'll take him, we'll pick him up, take him to our hideout, take all the jewels, and then let him go. So there was crowds around Navadvip. So they very inconspicuously they went up to the child and say, "Oh, little child," so that nobody would see that they were kidnapping him. They said, "Oh, little child, we can see that you're lost. We'll help you find your way home. Please come, get on my shoulders. We know how to bring you home." And then they had nice sandesh. And they kept putting it in his hand, and he kept eating them. He was very happy. He was riding on their shoulders. And they were just there, just... And every now and then they say, "We're bringing you home, little child," so all the people around would think that they were nice people. But actually, they were malicious. They were robbers. And Nimai was just having a really nice ride. He was having fun, eating sandesh, sweets. And they came to their hideout, where they lived. He said, "Now, they put little Nimai down." And as soon as they did, they realized they're at Nimai's house. Now, this took some time. In the meanwhile, all the family of Nimai was looking everywhere for the child, and they couldn't find him. They were asking everyone, and nobody knew where he was. Again, fear. A little baby, just learning to walk, and he's gone. They were looking in every direction. They couldn't find him anywhere. There was nowhere else to look. It was desperate, hopeless. They were all sitting in the front of the house with their hands in their heads, in total anguish. Where is Nimai? And all of a sudden, these two men show up with Nimai in their shoulders, and they didn't see him. But they put Nimai down. They said, "Where are I?" And Nimai ran. He cried out and ran right into the arms of Jagannath Mishra. And all the relatives started cheering and cheering and cheering. The boy has come. They were the thieves. "We thought this was our hideout. We traveled such a long distance only to come right back to the house where we kidnapped him from. What happened?" So they kind of looked around like they were just passers-by. And then when nobody was looking, they ran away as fast as they could.
They kept running, running, running. They wouldn't stop. They ran and ran and ran until nobody else was around. And then they embraced each other and said, "We almost got caught today. It's only by the grace of Goddess Chandi that we escaped." They asked Nimai, "What happened?" And he said, "Oh, I got lost, and two really nice men, they came and brought me home. They wanted to give rewards to the men. They made a nice turban to come out to give to them, but they couldn't find." So in this beautiful little pastime, we find that even though these people were thieves, the Lord was so kind, He allowed them to serve Him. They made Him happy. And certainly, they were going to be liberated. One day, and it's getting late, so perhaps I should end with this story. One day, a Brahmin who was traveling to all the various holy places came to the house of Jagannath Mishra. This particular Brahmin, he was a very pure-hearted devotee of Gopal Krishna. His only two possessions was a Shalagram Shila and a deity of Gopal. And the temple was his own body. He had them hanging around his neck. And he, day and night, always chanted the names of Gopal. He had a Gopal mantra that he was reciting constantly. He practically never spoke anything else except the names of Krishna. And he always had tears of ecstatic love in his eyes. And whatever food he had, he would prepare and offer it to Gopal and would never, ever, ever eat anything that he didn't personally offer to his Gopal and his Shalagram. In this way, he went from place to place. He came to the door of Jagannath Mishra. When Jagannath Mishra saw this devotee, he had such effulgence. He emanated such love, compassion, and light that Jagannath Mishra understood this is a saint. And he fell down and clasped the feet of this pilgrim and invited him into his house, washed his feet, gave him a sitting place, and said, "We are so fortunate. Where do you live?" And the pilgrim said, "I have no home. I just travel around from place to place with my Gopal." And Jagannath Mishra said, "Wherever you go, you make that into a holy place. And we are so fortunate today, my family, can serve you. Let us arrange for you to cook for Krishna." So he said, "Fine." So Jagannath Mishra cleaned the area, and this Brahmin would only eat what he personally cooked for Gopal. So he made a nice offering of rice and sabjis. And he sat down after the preparation, put the offering before his deities, and then chanted a mantra for Gopal to accept his loving offering. And as he was calling Gopal, little Nimai appeared before him and with his tiny little lotus-like hand picked up a clump of the rice and put it in his mouth, was smiling very brightly and chewing on it. When the Brahmin saw this, nothing like this ever happened before. He was shocked. He cried out, "Hi, hi!
Hi!
My offering has been spoiled by this child.
Jagannath Mishra saw little Nimai just handful after handful of rice eating it right in front of the deity and this Brahmin who was just shocked. Jagannath Mishra picked up a stick and came running. I'll teach you, my child. You can't do this to my guests. And little Nimai ran away. And the Brahmin, he grabbed hold of Jagannath Mishra. He said, the child is innocent. He doesn't know right from wrong. It's not his fault. It's my destiny. It's my karma. Don't you understand? It's not written in my destiny that I'm meant to eat nice cooked rice today. It's very seldom I get cooked rice anyway. Just usually I only get fruits and roots. So just bring me some fruits and roots and I'll be happy. Jagannath Mishra said, no, please cook again. We'll clean everything up and we'll bring new bhoga and prepare again. He said, I've already tried. Krishna doesn't want me to eat today. Jagannath Mishra fell at his feet, clasped to his feet, crying, please cook again. If you leave our house without eating a good meal, it will be a disgrace to our whole family. And then all the family members fell at his feet and begged him. He said, all right. And everyone was very happy. He started cooking. And Jagannath Mishra said to some neighborly ladies and family, said, take this restless Nimai out of the house and keep him with you. So they took him. And the pilgrim was cooking nice prasad. And when it was done, he put the offering before Gopal. And meanwhile, these ladies, they were playing with Nimai. They loved him more than their life. He said, Nimai, you don't know who this person is. You don't know where he's coming from, and yet you're eating food that he cooked. Don't you know that you could lose your caste by doing this? Nimai said, I'm a cowherd boy. I always eat food cooked by Brahmins. And they smiled, and they didn't know what he was talking about. And they were telling him stories, and he was entertaining them by dancing and singing and smiling, and he got them so totally mesmerized in the network of his personality that he slipped away, and they didn't even notice he was gone. He went direct to the Brahmin, who was sitting with his hands folded, chanting the Gopal mantra, Gopal, please come accept my loving offering. And then he heard some chewing. He opened his eyes, and there was little Nimai with a handful of rice in his mouth, smiling, glancing upon the Brahmin. This was too much. He cried out, hi, hi, again this child has spoiled my offering. Jagannath Mishra came running with a stick and Nimai ran into another room and closed the door. Jagannath Mishra said, come out from here. I'm going to give you a thrashing today. I'm not going to allow you to make a fool of me and our whole family by your restless, mischievous activities. I must teach you. And the Brahmin was saying, no, no, he doesn't know. He's just a little boy. It's not his fault. You can only punish someone when they do something that they know is wrong, but he's too young to know right or wrong. Can't you see? Isn't it clear to you? It is not my destiny to eat nice rice. Just give me some fruits and roots. Jagannath Mishra said, you must eat. We'll clean up the kitchen and we'll bring you new bhoga and you could cook again. He said, it's already the middle of the night. I'm not going to cook again. And Jagannath Mishra, with his hand, he sat down with his head in his hands, feeling himself so unfortunate that a saintly guest came and his guest was not treated properly in his own home.
At that time, the elder brother of Lord Chaitanya, Vishwarup, appeared. He was so beautiful, so cultured, so well-mannered. As soon as the pilgrim Brahmin saw Vishwarup, he gazed upon him. And he asked, "Who is this? Whose son could this be? Who is the fortunate mother and father? You are the son of Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi. How fortunate your house is that you have a son like this." Vishwarup bowed down. And he said to the Brahmin, "We are so fortunate that such a saintly person as you has made our home into a holy place by coming. But we are so unfortunate that you didn't get to eat our rice. Please, cook again." He said, "It's already late at night, and I've already tried twice, and I didn't get any rice. I can only eat what's offered to Gopal, and if a child eats it first, I can't offer it to Gopal." Vishwarup fell and clasped the feet of the Brahmin and begged him, "Please, please, it's not so late, cook again." And everybody gathered around him, bowing down, saying, "Please cook again." He said, "All right." He started cooking. Jagannath Mishra asked, "Where is Nimai?" They said, "He's in the room and he's sound asleep. He is so asleep he doesn't even know anything in the world is happening. So there's no problem." Jagannath Mishra said, "Guard his bed, make sure he's asleep." And then Jagannath Mishra, from the outside of that door, he bolted it so no one could get in and out. And he stood in front of the door with a stick to guard it. Very, very tight security. Now it's the middle of the night. He finished his cooking. He put the food in front of his deity of Gopal, folded his palms, and chanted the Gopal mantra, begging Gopal to accept the offering. Just at that time, the Lord sent Nidra Devi, the goddess of sleep. She entered the house and everyone fell fast asleep except the Brahmin and Nimai, who came before the Brahmin and picked up a handful of rice and ate it. The Brahmin looked and saw this little boy gazing right into his eyes with a beautiful smile on his face, eating the rice. "Hi, hi! Again the child has spoiled my offering." But this time nobody heard him because they were sleeping. And then Nimai spoke. He said, "Oh, Brahmin, what is my fault? You're calling me to come and eat, and I'm eating, and now you're becoming so upset. You're calling my name, you're calling my mantra, you're offering it to me, and because you're offering it with such love, I cannot resist coming. I cannot restrain myself from coming to accept the love of your offering. Can't you see? I am the Gopal who you have dedicated your life to serve and to please." And then the Lord manifested a beautiful form. He manifested the form of Krishna, who had a complexion like a newly formed monsoon rain cloud. Beautiful, beautiful lotus-like eyes.
On his head, there was a string, a gunja mala, a string of gunja seeds. And on the top of that was a peacock feather. There was the Kostubha mani upon his chest and the Vajayantik mala, a garland extending below his knees. He had a dhoti that was like the flashing yellow of lightning. This beautiful form of the Lord had eight arms. Four were holding the conch shell, lotus flower, a club, and the Sudarshan chakra disc. One hand was holding a pot of butter, and the other hand was eating it. And two hands were playing the flute. He saw behind the Lord there was a whole forest of kadamba trees. He saw the entire Vrindavan Dham manifested. And there were cows, gopas, gopis, Govardhan, Yamuna. Everything he meditated upon in the core of his heart, his whole life, was now physically being seen before him. The Supreme Lord, Gopal, his lovable object, and the land of Vrindavan. Seeing this, he fell unconscious in ecstatic love. And then the Lord touched him. And that touch thrilled him like an electrical current of ecstasy, and he woke up. And again he saw this beautiful form. And then Lord Chaitanya spoke to him. He said, "You are my servant, birth after birth after birth. You do not remember, but I remember. In my last incarnation of Krishna, when I was a baby, this same age, you came to Gokul Mahavan, to the house of Nanda Maharaj, as a pilgrim Brahmin. And I stole your rice and ate it then too, and revealed to you who I really am." He said, "I have descended into this world with the greatest of all gifts, the gift of ecstatic love for God, Krishna Prema. And I have come to give this gift through propagating the Harinam Sankirtan movement throughout the world. People will realize the sweetest, highest of all goals of life through this chanting of my holy names." I order you to give me the promise that you will not tell anyone what you have seen. The reason he made him give this promise is because if Jagannath Mishra and the other devotees understood that their son was God, they would not have the same spontaneous freedom of loving exchanges. The Brahmin promised. And the Lord said, "You could stay here in Mayapur and you could watch my pastimes." And then that beautiful form became little baby or little child, Nimai again. And he disappeared back into his room and laid in bed and went to sleep. The Brahmin was in such spiritual trance. He started crying out, "Jai Gopal, Jai Gopal, Jai Gopal, Jai Gopal." And he was in such a trance of ecstatic love, he took the rice that Gopal had eaten and he started eating it. And he became so mad with love of God, he was smearing it on every limb of his body, chanting Jai Gopal. And all the family members of Nimai woke up. And they all came running. And they saw this Brahmin with rice all over his body. And as soon as he saw them, he became very composed and sat down and was eating. Yes. He said, the offering went well, and I'm now honoring this man. They were very happy. In his mind, in his heart, he was thinking, I have to tell them the supreme absolute truth. The son of Nanda and Yashoda, Krishna, is living in their house. If they understand that, they'll attain the ultimate perfection of life. But I can't tell them because I promised I wouldn't. That pilgrim Brahmad, he remained in Navadweep. And every day or so, he would come to beg at the house of Jagannath Mishra and Sachi. And while he was there, he would, in great prema, bhava, he would watch the pastimes of little Nimai. But he never told anyone. This beautiful story shows the beauty of bhakti. Yayatamam prapadyante tams tathaiva bhajamyaham mamavartmanuvartanti manushya parata sarvasya. As we surrender with love to the Lord reciprocates. And it is this spontaneous love that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to the world to give. From the day of his birth to his most innocent little childhood pastimes. And it culminated years later when he established the Harinam Sankirtan movement. And empowered such great souls as Nityananda Prabhu, Raghunath Das Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and a whole parampara of great souls to be instruments of his compassion. And on this day of Sri Gaur Purnima, with very deep gratitude in our hearts, we thank His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, for giving us this gift, the gift that the Lord had brought to this world in its purest state. When we see what is really the qualities of a Vaishnava, no envy, no pride, no selfishness, which is exhibited by the Lord and His own devotees, then following in those footsteps sincerely, we can actually understand the Lord's appearance in this world. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvata tyakva deham punara janma naiti mameti sorjana. Krishna tells in Gita, one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities in this world never takes birth again in this material world, but attains my supreme abode. What does it really mean to understand? It means to understand through the lives of the great souls. Thank you very much. Now we will